There's something going on with the mic, so I'm just going to very quickly just adjust something. We're going to come right back on. You listen to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR.
Hi, this is Perry from the Templars. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Oi, oi.
And oh, that's so much better. And we are back. Welcome to the show. And if you are just joining us right now, it's Caroline from Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. And I've got an amazing guest on who has done some incredible, wonderful work in regards to just addressing, educating, and advocating in regards to child and youth sexual exploitation. And I think especially right now, they've got some amazing work going on in light of the Amanda Todd case, which has been very, there's been a lot of buzz about. They've also got something amazing called the Predator Watch. And if, in case you don't know who I'm talking about and you didn't hear the first couple minutes of the show where there was a little bit of technical difficulty, I've got the wonderful, the lovely Diane Snowden on the show from Children of the Street Society. Now, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And it's much better now that I can hear you. So tell me a little bit about the society and just how it started, because it's you're coming up to, is it the 17th or the 18th anniversary?
We're coming up to 18 years.
Wow.
And we started, I actually started in 1993 doing education around sexual exploitation, and we incorporated Children's Street in 1995. And we started by doing public awareness and education in the schools,
mm-hmm.
and over the years that has expanded to service providers, parents, law enforcement, social workers. And over the years, our mandate has also changed as far as we now do early intervention and support for families that have been affected by sexual exploitation.
Wow, that's fantastic. Would you be able to share a little, just your story in terms of how you started the organization?
Well, unfortunately, our family was personally touched by the issue of sexual exploitation with a daughter who connected with a predator when she was 13 years old, and he was a pimp in the community that we lived in, and he introduced her to drugs and partying. She ended up running away from home and connecting to the street life in the downtown east side. And she was pimped on the streets, what was called at that time the kiddie stroll.
Mm-hmm. On Franklin
and,
Street.
So that's how I ended up being introduced to this lifestyle and understanding the frustrations that parents had trying to keep their kids safe, and the lack of services and understanding around the issue.
And since you founded your organization, and I applaud you for your work, and I wanted to ask, how has it evolved over the years? Because 18 years is a long time.
It is. As I stated, when we first started, we were working with youth that were being pimped on the kiddie stroll,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have a kiddie stroll in Vancouver any longer. We do have some street activity where youth are bought and sold, but the majority of sexual exploitation is now happening online. So our vision has changed where we are looking for a world where children and youth are safe and free from all forms of sexual exploitation. And a lot of that sexual exploitation now is online and to do with technology.
Wow.
So we've had to make sure that we know what trends are happening and also lobby to the provincial government to make sure that there's services that are relevant to the way sexual exploitation is happening nowadays, as well as the Child Protection Act and the Criminal Code to keep up with what's happening.
And I applaud you for that, because I've always wondered, I'm not a parent myself, but I've always been curious because I have enough trouble trying to catch up with social media and things because it evolves so quickly. Any tips in regards to, because I've got many friends who are parents who have youth, who have lots of children, And any recommendations in regards to things that they can do to make things a little bit safer, and how to frame those conversations?
Well, there's a broad way of keeping kids safer when it comes to sexual exploitation. There is the in-person recruitment, and then there's the online. And as far as the online, it's not just computers any longer. It's all types of technology that you use. I have children in my household, and they have cell phones. They don't use them to talk on the cell phone. They're using it, they're chatting in a different way on social networks than when we used to talk on phones. And parents aren't educated to keep them kids safe and to teach them how to use technology in a safe way. Unfortunately, we see young people that are sharing online things that they shouldn't be sharing and not understanding boundaries. And that's a big one, because it doesn't seem like it's... they think they're in the safety of their bedrooms in front of a webcam sending out images, not realizing where those images are going to be received, how they can be spread around, and how that person that's receiving the images could actually find where they are and put them in further danger. So it's a lot of training of parents and making sure that they talk to their children and what they're doing online. I was shocked when I found out just recently that one of the social networks that we see a lot of teens on is MySpace. And I found a statistic that said that over a two-year period, MySpace deleted 90,000 accounts because they were created by registered sex offenders.
90,000 accounts?
Over 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So those are individuals that are registered sex offenders. So they've been charged, convicted on the registry. And that doesn't add all the other people that are predators and are inappropriate with children and haven't been caught. And the same social network also deleted 25,000 profiles weekly of users who don't meet the minimum 14-year age minimum requirement. So we have under 14 years of age on this site with all these different sex offenders.
That's a really scary picture.
It's very scary, yes.
How do we move forward then in regards to stopping as much as we can with technology growing every day? It's wild because I don't think of MySpace as much, but 90,000 accounts, that's a lot over a two-year period.
Well, we have over, I think there's over 4 million youth online on a daily basis. So the traffic is incredibly high. And we know that one in five of those youth are going to be solicited sexually online.
One in five.
So what we have to do is open up the conversation with youth about how someone that is not in their best interest could connect with them online. Children Straight goes into classrooms. We start in grade five, and we start talking about how to set up an online conversation with your friends. What is a healthy relationship to begin with? And what information is inappropriate online? And when I, in grade five and grade six, we're not talking about sending out nude pictures or anything like that, but we're just talking about having your Facebook and having a picture of yourself with maybe the name of your school behind you so that someone can identify where you are. And what kind of information that are you sharing and who are you sharing it with? Then as the grades go higher, we talk more about how you can party safer. Youth are going to party. They're going to socialize. How do you do that in a safer way? How do you make sure that there's a trusted adult that you can call when you need someone to come and pick you up right away wherever you are partying? How do you make sure that where you're going to party is a safe place? So we talk about all that in detail. We talk about LG parties, little girl parties, and the responsibility that older males have when it comes to having younger people at the party where there's free alcohol, free drugs. And then we, right up to grade 12, we start talking about the demand of the sex trade and who the customers are and males, and try and change attitudes when they become adults out in the community. And how do you keep yourself safe when you move away from home for the first time, going off to college, university? So there's a wide range from grade 6 to the end of grade 12 on the tools that we talk about, how to keep young people can keep themselves safe. I think language has to change as well.
Definitely.
One of the things we've always done as families is talk about our kids, to our kids at dinner tables, about what did you do today? What activities were you involved? What has to be added to that conversation is, what did you do online today? And we know, when I said 1 in 5 youth are solicited online, we also know that 75% of those kids don't tell a parent.
Wow.
They keep it to themselves. So when we're in the classroom, I've been asking kids, why don't you tell a parent? What is the reason for that? And we get three main answers. Number one answer is, if I tell my parents, they'll probably take away my technology. So they have a fear that they're going to be punished. So if I tell my parents, they're going to say, I'm going to take the cell phone away or the whatever technology they're using. And that's not going to solve the problem. It's better to teach a child to be safe online than take away the technology. They're going to use technology at the library, at the coffee shop, in the classrooms at school, at their friend's place, and we need to teach them how to use it safely. The other two reasons they don't tell parents is, my parents don't know anything about technology. They don't understand the communication that we're doing online, so why would I tell them? And my parents aren't comfortable when it comes to anything to do with sexuality and conversations online. So we need parents to make sure that they're comfortable having these conversations and be able to guide their children through it without overreacting and a lot of emotional, judgmental comments going on rather than supportive.
In terms of, one of the things you mentioned is a part of the training is also educating in regards to what someone who is purchasing sex, what the profiles are. Would you be able to share that with our listeners? Because just in terms of what that looks like, because I don't, it's not, I imagine it's not like somebody who's got like a sign across their forehead saying, hi, I'm a John.
Well, it depends. Okay, but someone who's looking for the sex trade are as a John, as a customer, the average age of a John is usually around in the mid-30s.
Okay.
So when they're purchasing sex. But if we're talking about suspects that are interacting with teens online who are asking for sexual images, the average age of that is, individuals are 25. So it's a different...
different demographics.
Yes. And we also know that both male and female are solicited online. A lot of times we think it's only girls. As far as the reports for sexual exploitation online to the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, about 85% of the reports are girls, average ages of 13 years old.
Wow.
Well, 15%, though, are boys. And my personal opinion is I do think it's happening more than 15% being boys,
they
but
just
it's
don't
not
share
reported
it
the same way. So it's not just talking to our girls at home, it's also talking to our young males.
Wow. What are some of the conversations that we can speak to about our young boys? It's one of those things where I've wondered about that, because I know worldwide Amnesty International has stats that I believe it's 1 in 3 women have experienced sexual violence before the age of 18, 1 in 6 men. And I've always questioned that stat in regards to the men, because I've always felt that as a society, we don't give men permission to share those things. And I think it's really important to have those conversations. And I love the work you're doing because it's having those conversations and creating those platforms. Any advice in regards to, as a society, what we can do, not just as a parent, but also just as role models and just in terms of as we're working to create a healthier society?
Well, I think a lot of the reasons we don't have males come forward is because we're much more judgmental and blaming when it comes to males that have ended up in a situation that they are a victim. Also, most predators are males. Even the males that young boys that are sexually assaulted, high percentage of the predators are males. So that also keeps males silent.
Mm.
And a lot of times it's looked at as the problem is because of their sexuality, where it's not. It's because they have been a victim of a predator. So that keeps boys silent as far as reporting and keeps parents silent for reporting.
Wow.
I worked with a mother that came to our office very concerned about her 13-year-old son and the connection he had with a man online, but she would not take that extra step of going and reporting it to the police because she was so afraid that someone in the community may find out. And
wow.
So it's even harder to get a parent of a young male that's been a victim to speak out or to even make a report.
So how do we pull that out of the closet?
I think we need to start talking to young males at a very young age, and that's why we're starting to go into the classroom in grade 5, is to make sure that they understand that sexual exploitation is a crime against a young person, and they are not to be judged. It's not their fault, and we need to support them. And I think if we start talking to young males in grade 5 and up through their teens, that generation is going to be more open to talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to change attitudes, and it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
So it's going to take a long time, and but we have to keep talking about it and making sure that they know that there's a safe place for them to reach out.
Mm-hmm. I applaud you with the work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
In regards to with women, what do you see for the future? We've shared half of it in regards to by educating this generation, we can evolve that as the future grows. And as technology grows, the other question I was going to ask is, in terms of, because Vancouver, the Lower Mainland, very multicultural. Do you find in terms of culturally sometimes it's more challenging sometimes to just, and just in terms of some tips perhaps for just having those conversations, and perhaps because of online, is it easier sometimes because you're able to have more tools online where they're able to access it?
Multicultural communities, definitely there is more barriers.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, Children's Street hasn't got those tools. I would love to be able to provide better services to all cultures, but we don't have those services. And one of the things I would love to do is work with an agency that does have the ability to work with people with the different cultures and languages and build on the information that we have gathered and the educational programs that we have developed and set it up so that it can reach other people in other languages and other cultures as well. We don't have that ability, unfortunately. But it definitely does add extra barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to go into smaller communities and support Aboriginal families, and that's another huge barrier that is up with being able to go and making sure that people are safe in other communities as well, in the smaller communities, because we know that Aboriginal youth are even at higher risk when it comes to sexual exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get those conversations going.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, unfortunately, when you go into small communities, Aboriginal youth will not speak out because everybody in the community knows each other. That adds an extra barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't go and report to the police, or they won't report to the social worker because that person is married to their aunt or is a friend of their parents. And sometimes they feel that they can't talk to anyone in the community. So when we go into a community and do some education, we a lot of times get disclosures because we're the first person that has come into the community and have had a frank, open conversation and given them the opportunity that they can come and ask for services and disclose what's happening. So that's an extra barrier that we also have to be able to overcome.
Mm-hmm. I know I read your annual report from last year. I had to read it because it was pretty, the work you do is just astounding. One of the things that you I noticed in the report, I believe it was Newfoundland or St. John's that, and did you find that there were different issues across the country than there were in BC that communities faced in regards to sexual exploitation, et cetera, when you were educating the service providers?
Actually, there isn't a lot of differences in the different communities. The amount of sexual exploitation that's happening at street level or happening online can be different in every community.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the different types of sexual exploitation is going on, it's pretty much the same across the country. Different populations, different ages maybe, but how people are targeted. And online, you never know who the predator is or where they are. They aren't necessarily even in that community.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different services in every community. Winnipeg has a lot of frontline services, a lot of agencies that work with sexually exploited youth.
Hmm.
I think they're further ahead than we are in BC.
Okay.
And the provincial government there has really made it a high-profile issue there.
Hmm.
They've put up a provincial strategy on how to deal with sexual exploitation, and there's been a lot more funding there. So their services are much higher.
Mm-hmm.
They are dealing with more street level than we are in BC, though.
Okay.
And I don't know if that reflects on how active people get on addressing the issue, because the community can see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when community can't see a problem, they don't think it happens. So that those are the differences that we can see. Now, you mentioned about going to Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
What we actually did is we were doing a train the trainer,
mm-hmm,
and sharing how we set up our school-based program and our materials and how we set up disclosures and how we do parent support so that they could set up their own programs.
That's fantastic.
So we weren't in the community working with the youth or doing the education with the youth. We were doing the education with the service providers so they could use the model that we have set up. It wasn't necessarily talking about stats of what's happening in their community, but how do you set up the model and,
mm-hmm,
set your needs into the model. So that was a really interesting project.
Mm.
And last year we went up to the Grand Forks and Midway,
mm,
and worked with the service providers up there to do a train the trainer with an art project that we had completed down in the Lower Mainland and was such a success. And it was just amazing how that community took on the project that we had set up and made it a big success in their own community. And that's one of the things Children's Street wants to be able to do, is help other communities and other agencies so they're not reinventing the wheel,
mm-hmm,
and use the information and the models that we've set up and be able to do it in their own communities. So it's relevant in their community, and then also the service providers are right there in the community, so if there's disclosures or people asking for help, they know who to reach out to in their own community.
No, that's important. I think that's really important work. We're going to take a really quick short break, and when we come back, we're going to be chatting a lot more. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
CITR 101.9 and So Salacious presents to you the up-and-coming indie rock band Valley Girl, coming to the Media Club October 21 with special guests Harley Spade, Alex Randall, and more. Tickets go for $10 a pop, kids, and doors open at 9. So don't miss Valley Girl, Sunday at the Media Club, located 695 Canby Street. Have fun.
And we are back at Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And one of those things in regards to sexy to me equals confidence, where you feel good. It's also a personal choice where you are choosing for sexuality. But when things are not your choice, where it falls under sexual exploitation, and especially if you're a youth, and it's really important. And so I'm very excited. If you're just joining us now, I've got the wonderful Diane Soden from Children of the Street Society on, and we've been discussing a lot about their wonderful Predator Watch program, sharing their model that they've had with other communities across the country, so they're able to create their own, so they can serve and offer other programming for children and youth who have been exploited, and also creating awareness and training models as well for both the parents, training the trainers as well, etc. So there's been a lot of wonderful work, and Diane, you're amazing.
It's not just me. Well, Children of the Street is got great staff. We have the most committed, dedicated staff, and they're so full of energy and passion about this issue. And I feel so fortunate to have the staff that I have that supports the work we're doing.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's great that you've got an amazing team, mm-hmm. and it's continued to evolve. When did you launch the Predator Watch, and how has it evolved over the time from the time you launched and to now, like as it's evolved?
Well, the Predator Watch has been 3 years now, I guess, wow. that we first started, and we set up a Predator Watch website. And if you go to predatorwatch.ca, you will see stats on the Predator Watch website, as well as all the criminal code and information around sexual exploitation. And we've done advertisement campaigns as well. We had TV commercials and radio commercials for a year, and it was directed at making sure people understood that sexual exploitation is happening, and that there are undercover officers online, undercover officers that are actually online looking for predators on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. The same way as you had undercover officers with gangs and drugs, we now have undercover officers when it comes to looking for predators online. So we then moved into a poster campaign, mm-hmm. and it was a big poster of a police officer with a child's mask, and it said, attention predators, undercover officers are online. And so it was to get the information to predators, you don't know who you're talking to, because we've up to that point, we've done a lot of work educating young people about don't talk to strangers, you don't know who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to turn the table onto the predator, saying, you may think that you're speaking to a 14-year-old girl or boy, but it could be an undercover officer. Vancouver police did some sting operations, which they continue to do, where mm-hmm. they have officers that go online and present themselves as a teen, and then when a predator connects with them and talks to them in a sexual way and wants to connect up with them for sex, they can make arrangements to meet them, and the person then is arrested.
Hmm.
So that was part of the partnership with Vancouver Police. And just recently, we've got the Predator Watch posters in a lot of the restaurants and in the washroom stalls in nightclubs and restaurants and gyms in the Lower Mainland. And that was in partnership with Zoom Media. Mm. They gave us space to put the posters around the Lower Mainland. And we also have an online banner, and which is an advertisement that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are all the different types of projects that we've been doing with Predator Watch up to this point. And it's more, that project is more targeted towards the predator and educating them that what they're giving up, if they connect with someone underage for sexual purposes, they could be, well, they're breaking the law. Mm-hmm. They could end up in jail. They could lose their reputation, lose their family, and all the different things that, repercussions that can come from that activity.
Wow. No, I think that's important. One of the things I wanted to touch on before we had the break, you were mentioning when you've, in regards to Winnipeg, I was asking about what it's, in terms of just across the country, what it's like, that they had a really great provincial strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious about that because, as you know, there was the Amanda Todd case, which I cried very badly when I read her video or watched her video. And what I've noticed is a lot of the media, the way it seems to be handled, and please jump in if this seems incorrect, seems to be focusing on the bullying aspect, which was part of it. Mm-hmm. But I feel there was a couple different folds to that. So there was the bullying, there was the sexual exploitation and the online predator to start with. Then there was the bullying and almost the, I don't know whether to call it slut shaming or what the right way to describe that. And then the third, when she, in her video, she mentioned she hooks up with an old friend and her, and then shortly after that, his girlfriend, her friends and his friends and him all show up at her new school and beat her and leave her in a ditch until her dad is able to come pick her up.
Right.
And so it almost seems like there's three parts. So if you could wave a magic wand and tomorrow there would be a provincial strategy in place, what are some key elements you'd like to see in that?
Okay, my magic wand would be, I would like, first of all, the provincial government to take leadership on the issue.
Mm.
And it has to come from the top down.
Okay.
Programs like Children's Street, we can do the service providing in the community,
mm-hmm.
but we can't be the experts for the province. And that has to come from a provincial level.
Yes.
So what I would like to see is a committee or a board, whatever title you want to put on it, or a unit, that are experts when it comes to online sexual exploitation.
Hmm.
And that committee or unit could be made up of Vancouver Police, RCMP, Crown, someone who... knowledge of all types of technology,
mm-hmm.
An educator when it comes to the Criminal Code and the Child Protection Act, and the ability, and a social worker,
mm-hmm.
and the ability for frontline workers like our organization, if we have a disclosure, that we can call this unit and say, these are the facts, this is what's happening, what do we do? How do we intervene? How do we keep this young person safe? What criminal code can we pull out of your hat to make sure that we have the right criminal code aspects put in place?
Mm.
What child protection acts are there? Can we get an intervention order to keep this child safe? Exactly what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's moving forward so quickly,
mm-hmm.
we need experts that we can call. On a provincial level right now, we have the Office to Combat
the Human Trafficking.
Yeah, OCTIP.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's to do with human trafficking, you can get in touch with them, and they are the experts, and they will help you.
Hmm.
Police officers have the ICE unit, the Integrated Child Exploitation Unit. So if they have child pornography, sexual assault of a child, they can get in touch with that unit that can help them directly, and they're the experts. When it comes to online sexual exploitation, there isn't a go-to group of experts. And, you know, we as a nonprofit that get disclosures, we can get in touch with the police, or and that police officer may not know the criminal code when it comes to all the aspects of sexual exploitation, child pornography, and things get missed. And so that would be my magic wand, that there is a committee or a unit that of experts that anyone working in this field would be able to go to, get some direction and support to help that young person walk through the whole process.
Which is key.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine just, I've been bullied myself as a youth, but not to that degree, and I can only imagine with adding sexual exploitation and just where to go as well. Actually, one of our comments on Facebook right now, we've got people commenting on the show as we're going, was someone was going to ask how children can be empowered to speak up. Because I know we touched on for smaller communities, sometimes it's difficult because everybody knows everybody. But as in other parts of the province, is there other ways that you can encourage them to speak up?
Well, if you're talking about sexual exploitation, speak up. First of all, the adults in that community have to make it so it's a safe place for them to speak up.
Okay.
Youth won't take the initiative to be the first one to talk about it. So we need to be able to talk openly about what sexual exploitation is and make it common conversation in our households, in our classrooms, in our community, so that youth are comfortable to safely speak out. We also have to build empathy among other students and youth, so that if someone does come forward, that they are not being targeted and blamed as the victim. And so we need to build that empathy, and that's not going to happen overnight. So there's a lot of things that we need to do on just the basics to be, have the conversation opened up. I find that a lot of times when youth come forward, they want to make sure that you know what they're talking about, that you're using the same lingo, and that they don't feel that you're looking down on them or judging them. And that's what the reaction a lot of youth say that they receive when they reach out to an adult. And again, an adult that can, or a trusted person that can support that young person to report. And once it's reported to authority, that authority is there to support that young person and to make sure they're safe through the whole process.
Wow. That, I think that's really, really key. Just in terms of finding safety, and I can see how it would be very difficult to speak up, and especially just in terms of how our society is, unless we create that fabric of society and have community conversations, doing the work that you're doing and encouraging adults to take responsibility as well to change things.
It has to be the adults that take the lead.
Very definitely. And so, and I know I kind of asked a really long conversation. Do you, in terms of, in specifically for the Amanda Todd case, based on what you know, would you say it's a combination of sexual exploitation, the bullying, as well as, I almost call it gang up, where it's the almost victim blaming?
It is victim blaming and being judgmental, and that's what I was referring to earlier as building that empathy among youth. I don't want to talk about Amanda's situation particularly.
We'll talk about other stuff.
But in general, bullying can be a result of sexual exploitation. And we have to make sure that youth feel safe enough to come forward if they've made a mistake and sent out an image that afterwards they regretted that they had sent that out, without thinking that they're going to be bullied afterwards. And that's that building that empathy before those situations come to light in the school or in the community. And it's very easy for the community to jump on the bandwagon about bullying because it's easier to talk about.
Yes.
We all are used to talking about anti-bullying, we don't want bullying to happen. And everyone knows what bullying looks like,
mm-hmm.
but we're not as comfortable talking about sexual exploitation or even know what that even looks like, so we don't want anyone to deal with it.
Yes.
And it's a much bigger, more complex problem than just anti-bullying.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense.
If people want to, get involved in the prevention sexual exploitation, a great time to start is during the March Awareness in this province. Every year we have a March Awareness Week around sexual exploitation of children and youth. This coming year it's going to be from March 11th to the 17th,
mm-hmm.
next calendar year. And if anyone's interested in educating themselves, they can go to our website at childrenofthestreet.com, and we post all the different events that are happening province-wide. So during that week, there's forums going on, there's candlelight marches going on, there's education for service providers. So there's a lot of different things happening province-wide that people can get involved in to educate themselves about the issue and find out what agencies or groups or nonprofits in their community are active and how they can join in from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
So March Awareness is a great week to get involved and educate yourself.
I think that's fantastic, and I'm actually going to add to that, which I think everybody should check your website out anyway and not wait until March. They should be doing it all the time because the work you do it 365 days a year.
We do.
And I think definitely to get more education in March is really, really important. But why not start today? Why not take a look? And you've got some fantastic things going on. You've also got a calendar that's coming out as well for that you were mentioning too.
We have the calendar available right now. And how the calendar was developed is we did what we called was a youth art engagement project, and we worked with a group of just over 30 youth over a 9-week period, and we had 9 educational sessions with these youth, and it was all to do with sexual exploitation and all the other social issues connected with sexual exploitation as far as drug addiction, homelessness, and media, technology, all of that was covered over the 9 sessions. And after each session, they spent an hour doing artwork, and it was like social justice art to express what they had learned in the educational classes. And at the end of the program, we had an art gallery in the community, and we invited the community, the youth, and their parents, caregivers, and friends, and celebrated the art that they had done, and it was a great success. We had well over 100 people come through and see the youth's art, and they were so proud. They had written art statements to explain what their art meant when it came to sexual exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And the evening, they were the experts and were re-educating the community about what they learned through the 9 sessions.
Wow.
So then what we did is take pieces of that art and develop a calendar. And the calendar runs from January next year right through till April of 2014. And we've got explanation of what the Awareness Week is in March. We have the artwork, the art statements, and then a Do You Know statement on every month. So the whole calendar is an educational tool as well, and celebrating what the youth did in the classroom, and it's used as a fundraiser for Children in the Street. They sell for $20, and you can order them online. If you go to our website and just click on shop, it will come up, and you can actually order it and pay online. And the funds from the calendar go directly to our school-based program. So the money that we raise go back to doing education in the classroom
community.
For students.
That's fantastic. One of the things I was also going to ask is, in terms of, and you've kind of answered it already about, and in regards to, and I'm going a little bit more North America on this, just because there's been a lot of cases in the States, and I know we focus more on sexual exploitation in regards to, with predators, but as well sexual exploitation in regards to, and I'm thinking of youth in terms of the cases of sexting, where they're sending images of themselves, and somebody's had a bad breakup, they share it with somebody, and it ends up going viral,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. And if we could kind of touch on that as well, on that angle, and just anything in terms of any advice that we haven't talked about already, things in regards to, you know, just being aware, because you're already doing some fantastic pieces about educating what to put online, being careful and realizing that you're not just in your own bedroom, that when you're putting something out there, you're really putting it something out there, whether, you know, by on your phone or however.
Right. Well, one of the things a lot of youth don't understand is sexting or is actually a form of child pornography.
Mm.
And so we have young people that are sending out messages or photos that are actually based under the criminal code of child pornography. Anyone under the age of 18 that is sharing or distributing images of a sexual manner of someone under the age of 18 are distributing or making child pornography. And when at the beginning of your question, you were talking about in the U.S., you see
mm-hmm.
it a lot. Well, Canada is only second to the U.S. in the world when it comes to the amount of offenses of child pornography. So we are only second in the world. And over the last 5 years, it's actually increased by 900%. So it is a huge issue. A lot of times people think child pornography overlying is to a predator. We know that a lot of those pictures are sent to a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Youth call it for your eyes only,
mm.
and it's part of their dating, and they will send a sexual picture to their girlfriend or boyfriend. And we know when teens are dating, it's usually not forever.
Mm-mm.
And in a month, 2 months, or 2 years later, when they break up, unfortunately, sometimes those images are shared.
Hmm.
And sometimes it's to get back at the other person because feelings have gotten hurt, or just because they don't have respect for each other and don't understand privacy and share it with buddies or other girlfriends. And part of the education we do in the classroom is explaining to youth the repercussions and the criminal code when it comes around to sharing those types of images. And the fact that even if you are sending a picture of yourself,
mm-hmm.
that is self-sexual exploitation, and you could be falling under the offense of making and distributing child pornography.
Wow.
So it's very complicated and very complex. It's really hard to talk about all these issues in a workshop with youth to make sure they understand the whole picture of what sexual exploitation is.
Mm-hmm. It's a very big topic.
It's huge.
I need to have you on the show again, if that's okay, to explore a little bit more. The other, last but not least, things I wanted to touch on as well is in regards to just as a society, do you feel that we still blame women? Like, I mean, you look at, like, the era of Mary Magdala, like, go way back away for a very long time ago to, like, in terms of stories to present day, just in regards to just where there's a friend of mine who used to co-host the show with me who's a sex educator. We were joking about it the other day that as a teen, sometimes the sex education that used to be in schools was basically to forewarn you just that as a girl that yeah, just men have hormones and it may be out of control. I can still remember my grandmother telling me not to hold hands with the boy because I might make him excited. So when I was quite young, and which of course is a little bit of a shock later on when hormonal levels change when you get in your 30s, but that's a whole other conversation in another show. But I was just curious in regards to what your thoughts were in regards to sexuality, especially as it evolves from youth to adults, and in terms of the almost the hypersexualization of people. And I think of even just high profile cases such as with Kristen Stewart from Twilight and Robert Pattinson, where she ended up getting together with her director from Snow White and The Huntsman. And a lot of the media angle almost painted her as a Scarlet Woman, because not only did she cheat, but she also broke it, basically had her affair with a man who was married who had a young child. And I thought it was really interesting just the angle that the media took on that, where it was almost she was blamed as opposed to it being two equal adults who hurt the people that they're with.
Well, that's a huge
thing. It is. It's a very big one.
And, you know, I don't want to generalize.
Mm-mm.
I think a lot of times we blame the victim, male or female. And when we talk about sexual exploitation, we know a higher percent of the victims are females. So there is a lot of blaming going on, and there is a lot of attitudes, boys will be boys, and boys need this outlet, and it's the female's responsibility to not encourage any way that they will misbehave, the male will misbehave, and it will be because of something the female did.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see that. I even see it when if we have, for example, a young female student, and she is approached by a male teacher, and the blame on that situation is usually the fault of the male teacher, and that the young girl is the victim. If it's in reverse, where we have a young male student and a female teacher is making inappropriate sexual moves towards that male student, it's not taken the same seriousness, and a lot of times it's, well, is it, he's a boy, that's okay, it's not the same as if it was a young girl. So I actually see the reverse sometimes as well. If you understand what I'm trying to say?
I do. I was actually trying to remember the case in the States where, actually there's been several of them, and I think there was one in Mexico just the other day about exploitation where I believe it was a 14-year-old boy and his teacher.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a case a few years ago, quite a few years ago now, and it was in Seychelles. And was a 17-year-old boy in grade 12 and his female teacher. And I know the judge that actually moved forward and laid charges of sexual exploitation, and there was a lot of comments about, is that really sexual exploitation? He's a boy. Do we need to really protect him? You know, he's 17 years old. But if it was a 17-year-old girl that was being targeted by a male teacher, attitudes are very different.
Yeah.
So I think we need to not be concentrating so much if the young person is male or female, or the predator is male or female. It's more the age difference, the manipulation, and the adult is the one that is always in the wrong when it's victimizing a youth.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, thank you. So what's next for you? I know you're speaking in January, if I remember correctly, for one of the there's a conference. I saw your name in one of the books the other day.
Oh, so, okay.
Actually, on the weekend when I was with Julia Saunders, who is a sex educator who has been a childhood friend, and we used to co-host Juicebox Radio together with. But I was quite excited because you're speaking, I think it's an alternative education.
Right.
And so I was all excited. I'm like, I get to speak with her on Wednesday. So it was quite lovely. But I was going to ask if there's other opportunities where people can come and hear you speak if they... if you've got any events coming up where they can come.
Well, one of the things that is coming up on November 29th is Children's Street's AGM. Okay. And our AGM is going to be at Place the Art, which is at 1120 Brunette in Coquitlam. And it's from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And we're having a meet and greet and then some education and awareness. And we're going to have some of our youth facilitators that present in the classroom do some of the workshops that they do in the classroom to share with people in the community so they can see what we're doing. And we'll also be promoting our youth art calendar and explaining about all our different programs and how you can get involved with Children in the Street. So that is on November 29th. And if anyone wants any more information, they can go to our website and get in touch with us, and we would love to send them an invitation and directions and how to get in touch with us on that night.
And I'd love for you to plug your website one more time.
It's childrenofthestreet.com.
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Diane, for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome, and I'd love to have you again, but we'll have that conversation off air.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Up next is Han von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very... Oh, actually, he has changed the name of his show, too. And he's changed the show, too. And what is the title of
your
show?
Radio Free Europe.
Radio Free Europe. And he is an amazing, sexy man to be miserable with. He will guide you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. And he's got the best shoes in the world. So one of these days I need to have a webcam in here so you can actually see his shoes. But I think everybody knows I love shoes. until next week, you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Bye-bye.
I have realized today, honey.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
212 Productions, Beat Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, The Kiss Store, Heart and Soul Clothing Inc., Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.